Access number 28670, Mr. David Wilson, Reel 8. Now, we're just talking about your time when you got to Germany. Now, let's have a look at the conditions out there in Munsterlager, the camp, and then we'll have a look at what actually happened to you. So, what were the conditions like in Munsterlager?
Well, Munsterlager was quite a comfortable camp. It's the facilities were canny. They were near a small town, which was Soltau. They ran a couple of trips into Hamburg.
Now, hang on. So, what were the barracks like?
Oh, the barracks were good. They were quite modern. The LED itself had one block, which was set apart from the main barracks, containing all the usual facilities, the showers and toilets and the barrack room itself.
Were you in big shared rooms? Or
well, the barrack rooms themselves were shared, yeah, and there was...
How many to a room?
Two,
four, or like six. England, or were they smaller?
There was 10 in a room, 10 in a room. And the LED had three rooms, I think, three rooms in the, and the ablutions in our block.
What was the food like?
The food was, I haven't got any great recollection again of it being particularly bad or particularly good.
Okay.
You used to get some odd things. Odd to me, that was kippers for breakfast and that sort of thing, you know, and that was always odd. And there were stories about don't eat the porridge for breakfast this morning. Don't have porridge. I saw the cook corporal stirring it up with his broom, with a broom shank or something like that, you know. That was all sorts of daft stories. And but I don't think the food was bad. But of course, we did obviously spend a lot of time away from the camp as well.
Yeah. Oh, I can remember. Yeah. Now, what about a typical day? You know, I'm talking about when you first got there and you move in the LAD. What's a typical day's work or duties like for you when you're not on exercise, when you're in barracks?
Well, of course, when we did get there, the LAD was it was quiet in as much as the main part of the regiment was out on the scheme. So initially, after having been settled in for, I think it was only a couple of days, we were thrust into a scammel and we were on our way, you know, the map reference to get to meet up with the regiment. But during the time we were in the camp, a day going down to the LAD, you would start, I can remember one job you went to see the CEO, and generally speaking, you had your own, you sort of worked on your own initiative, let's say, in as much as if you were VME of V and there was a Sexton came down or a Cromwell. Or even they did have, I just remembered, they did have those Bren gun carriers. They had a couple of Bren gun, what for? Probably for the surveyors. They had a couple of those, and if one of those came down from the barracks with a fault on it or any sort of repair, you diagnosed what was wrong with it, and you got on with the job, and you went to see the CEO and said, you know, I've got this to do, so I'm. And presumably he documented it, but as far as the job was concerned, you got in and did it on your own initiative. If you had any problems, any questions to ask, or any special equipment that you wanted, obviously you had to go and see either the Q, the 2IC, the WO2, Q Hurley, or alternatively the captain. But generally speaking, you seem to work on stuff that appeared as and when necessary. You would get, for instance, put onto a job. I remember being up all one night just changing, wasn't really my job, I suppose, but changing a transfer box on a Jeep, which was the four-wheel drive transfer box, just simply because it was needed the next morning. But the actual build up of the, my memory is dimming a little bit about as far as the actual admin in the earlier day was concerned.
Okay, well, what about when you went out on this exercise then?
The exercise, that was full of
tell us about that
trauma.
Where were the exercises? Because you joined them.
Well, it was it was a Northern Army Group scheme, and if I'm not mistaken, it was called Longbow. And we, obviously, the 3 RHA being part of the 7th Armoured Div, everybody was involved, from what I remember. There were the Americans, the Luxembourgies, the Dutch, ourselves, and the French. And there was a white army and a blue army. And we were with the Dutch and the Luxembourgies. And I remember we were supporting 3rd Infantry Div, that's the upside down triangle, the red one, at the crossing of the river Weser, at Wesel. And according to the umpires, the bridge had been taken out. And and me personally was ordered to be divisional recovery. And we had to cross the river, which the Scammer could do without any trouble. It was diesel anyway. It was a ford. It was only as deep as maybe chest height. It was about chest height to a tallish bloke. And position ourselves at the other side of the river in order to fish any of these guys that came through and stalled in the middle of the river, which happened time out of number. I remember wading into this damn river, and it was freezing. Chest high, in fact, it was a bit higher on me, almost up to the neck, in attaching winch ropes and dragging them out. And that was one sort of traumatic memory of it. The other was we moved into this lager. We're caught up with the regiment, moved into this lager, and it was right in among a pine forest.
And what is an overnight lager?
It's a stop. It's when the regiment assembles and plans the next day and the next move and the conference of the regimental officers and the LAD and the order of the marches for the next morning is arrived at and who's going to do what and where they're going to go, and this was. As I say, in the middle of a pine forest, and I remember when we had a night out at a guest, a beer house, and got too many beers, and when we had a bit of a job to get packed up in time the next morning to follow our HQ battery out of the wood, and I remember forgetting me toolbox, or the steel army issue toolbox. And I ran over it. I found afterwards I'd run over this damn thing on the way out. And I was a few kilometres down the road when I suddenly remembered I didn't have my toolbox. It went back for it and rummaged around and found this thing. It was as flat as a haddock. And the tool, it took me a fortnight to get inside it. And when I got inside, the tools were all right, but the box was without a shape nor an ornament. And it's, of course, there was much mickey taken about that. It's one thing I do recall about that exercise as well, getting back to this business of if you can do the job, it doesn't matter what your trade is, if you're there, you get the job. Was I got seconded to a D battery to drive that Cromwell on a night move because the... for some reason, the regular driver was, I don't know, he was off sick or doing something else or what. But remember driving this Cromwell, that was a traumatic business, driving it on this night move, following just the convoy light of the vehicle in front. just one little tiny spot in which was obscured most of the time. I remember having one hand on the porthole and peering out. My eyes must have been out like organ stops, you know, following this damn little spot with this Cromwell. And as I say, apart from that, I cannot remember the whys and wherefores of how I was lumbered with a job. But you know, this is the sort of thing that happens if you're about and you can do it, you get the job to do. But it's for instance, the Cromwell in training had a little bit of plastic let in it so as to stop the muck from coming in, but of course, with a regular regiment, they didn't do that. So you got a load of rubbish coming in through the porthole.
But you were able to do it.
Oh yes, I enjoyed it. In retrospect, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Was that just one night?
It was just one night. Yeah. And then I was back to the Scammel again. The scheme itself.
This longbow,
it went over a few weeks, and we're all over Germany, and mainly in the region of this river Weser, I remember, and I recall with us that once we were flagged down by some other LAD lads that was parked by the roadside. I was going to mention this before, and the rear wheel of the Scammel was showing signs of running out of alignment, and they waved to us, and they're waving and frantically waving, and we just waved back and sailed on. And it was only a little while later and a bit further down the road, looked, and you know, through the mirror you could see the rear offside wheel was showing signs of buckling, you know, as if it was running out of truth. And when we investigated, that was on the axle end, on the axle casing itself, there's the hub retaining nuts are two huge ring nuts on a fine thread on the end of the axle casing, and the check nut had come loose, and it was the main retaining nut was slowly unscrewing itself so that the wheel was actually moving up, wheel, drum assembly, the whole lot. And I think that's it. That's what led me to, because the brakes felt a bit spongy and funny. They must have been partially leaving the brake drum. The brake drum was leaving the brake shoes, you know. And we spent hours, we jacked it up, spent hours, because the threads were damaged as well, of course, spent hours knocking this hub nut back around with a hammer and a punch. And we got it as far on as we could, but obviously the casing was damaged. And it was at that stage that we got a couple of days off, because we were quite near 7th Armoured Workshops, which I think was Fallingbostel. I think that was where it was. And we took it into 7th Armoured Workshops and got put up there for a couple of nights where they changed the axle casing. And then we were back looking for the regiment again. There was one... another humorous thing, I remember again being lost overnight with a Scammel, and we pulled into this this what appeared to be a useful place to put the bivvy up, and spent the night there. And when we woke up in the morning, it turned out to be a sort of tourist place. It was full of German civvies with our tents and little caravans and this sort of thing on the side of an ornamental lake, you know, and they were most upset to see a great army Scammel parked in the middle of all their civilian vehicles. So we beat a hasty retreat from there.
Anything else about the exercise? I mean, didn't...
Well, it was... No, I think I've covered most of what I can remember. I know it covered a number of weeks, and we were all over Germany, and of course, that was one of the reasons why we were very rarely back at the main LAD into the camp at Munster Lager.
How did you get on with the German civilians?
In the ones that were employed in the LAD, the blacksmith and Andy's, well, there was two blacksmiths, there was little and large. There was one tiny little fella who, that was Willie, who reckoned he had been in submarines during the war. He was built for it, you know, he was the right height for it, but it, of course he used to take the mickey because they didn't believe him. And there was another, Franz was the other blacksmith, and he was a real toffer. In fact, the army blacksmith is another Geordie lad.
They can't say it, remember?
No. The blacksmith. And he was very friendly with Franz, and he used to go home and socialise with him and all the rest of it. And we got on quite well with the civilians. There was one or two. There was a bloke called Thies, T-H-E-I-S-S. And he was the typical tall, blonde, Aryan, arrogant, Hitler Youth sort of a guy, and I didn't like him. I don't think anybody else liked him either. But apart from him, in the main, they were very reasonable sort of fellas.
What would you do when you went out in the evening, you know, when you're back at camp, after you'd done this this long exercise? What would you do in the evening?
Well, generally it was just something to eat. That we went to the CWL, which was the Catholic Women's League. They had a hut very close to our accommodation at the LAD, and used to get the great, beautiful double egg, double chips, double beans, everything, you know, and a drink, a couple of bottles of beer, and that was about it.
They served beer even at the Catholic canteen.
Yes, I used to get bottled beer there.
Any of the canteens you went to on the
side? Well, the main nappy in the
camp. What did that offer you?
Yeah, well, more or less the same sort of facilities. It was a bit more sophisticated. And of course you could buy stuff, they had a shop. But generally speaking, there was the odd sort of the table tennis and the snooker and that sort of thing. But again, that was as far as the facilities went.
Was there any sporting activities organised for you? Or were you not into, you know?
Can't remember in Germany.
Now, what about going out into town then? You know, just out drinking.
Well, Salto was the nearest small town, and again, it was just pubs going out to the Gasthaus, the beer cellars and beer houses down there.
Just what was it like? What was a beer? I mean, they've changed now a bit. Well, what was a beer cellar like then?
Well, they were quite pubbish, you know, English. With obviously not with a sort of English accent to it, but it was a drinking house. There wasn't anything else near on.
Did you drink much?
Not a lot. I never had a great capacity. Did get drunk over one weekend. I remember with it must have been a bank holiday or something. We were in camp, and somebody trotted out a couple of. Bottles of, this was down at the earlier day actually, as I say, it was a holiday weekend, trotted out a couple of bottles of what in retrospect must have been a sort of port wine, and we got drunk on that. I've never felt so ill in all my life as a hangover, but I remember the one, I was drunk, and I admit it, and the one that this Cromwell moved off the tank park into the hangar, and of course I was the only one around that could drive it, and I put this Cromwell through a space with about, I reckon there was only about 3 inches either side, as clean as a whistle, straight in, reverse, neutral turn, and square it up, and that was it, done and dusted. I probably couldn't have got through if I had been sober, and that was it, went racing straight in. No bother. But the generally speaking, there was one or two sort of organised trips. There was one to Hamburg, I remember.
What was that like?
That was good. We sort of did the town. Half a dozen of us wandered around till we got sick. We were up and down the Reeperbahn, ogling and I didn't get drawn into anything more than just ogling, but there was one or two of the lads that disappeared for a while. We got into this again, a beer house, a guest house, and it was, I recall it was, you had a sort of entrance area, and there was tables and seats around, and then there was about three stairs went up, and there was a, on the newel post of the of these the small staircase, there was a platform, there was a board nailed to the, or screwed to the top, and there was a monkey, a little marmoset thing, sitting, and it was chained by the neck. And I remember we went up the steps and into the back of the guest house, and there was girls in there, and there was one or two cubicles, and these guys disappeared into there and came out with bawdy comments, and then we decided to leave. And on the way out, this thing went to bite, well, it bit everybody, but it had a bite at me, and I swung my arm like this and knocked the thing off, and it obviously it was in great difficulty. It nearly hung itself on this chain, and we got turfed out by the old lady, turfed out into the street and don't come back type of attitude, you know. And then we wandered around and got into with some Canadians, and we decided we'd go on the Ulster, the moonlight on the Ulster or something like that. Anyway, and there's ferry boats ply back and forth, and I remember there was a bridge with sort of five arches, and I remember getting out with this rowing boat with these Canadians, there was three or four of us as well, into the middle of this thing, and the ferries were plying back and forth, and of course we got into, well, of course, as I say, we were drunk anyway, but we got into the wake of these ferries, and it nearly upset the boat, you know, and we were too far gone to bother, but these Canadians were becoming very worried and decided they want to be out. So we rowed to the side and put the boat back in and went back up the town again. It was the sort of trip it was just on the back of a QL, a lorry, you know, Bedford, a couple of QLs into Hamburg and then back to the camp again.
Anything else? I mean, you weren't there with them long in Germany, were you?
That was only about getting 5-6 months or something like that.
So what happened next then? You come back from the big exercise longbow.
Well, there was one sort of notable thing I remember that did happen before we actually came back to the UK. We used to, obviously, each regiment supplied, even when they weren't on a scheme, they supplied divisional recovery over a given period of time. And there was, of course, I mean, obviously, this was at the height of the Cold War. And there was constant border patrols, and it was generally the recce regiments that did them, like the Hussars and the Dragoons and Lancers and people like that. And we were duty recovery this particular weekend, and we were warned off to go up to this map reference. It was up beside Ulzen, up in the. Ulzen, Ulzen, I think. Ulzen. I think that's the way they spell it. But Ulzen was the sort of nearest town. And it was right on the Russian border.
East German border.
On the East German border, I think. We were told off to go up there. They had Dingo Scout. It was a 1721st Lancers that had broken down with his Dingo Scout car, Daimler Scout car. So we had to go up and recover that. And I don't know whether it was bad map reading or what it was, but according to our map, as we were heading due north, this particular small German village should have been 3 kilometres to the east, to our right. And when we found the signpost at this particular crossroads, again, this is sort of the terrain is all sort of pine forests and that, with clearings. And got into this crossroads, and the signpost said that this particular village, I forget the name of it, was 3 kilometres west to our left, which meant that we were quite a way into what appeared to be the East German zone. We didn't see anybody, but we beat a hasty retreat out of there. We finally found this Daimler scout car, and it was all a damn scrape because they had got it running themselves anyway. And that was it. So it was a bit of a wasted journey, but interesting nevertheless. So that when the time in Germany, the 3RHA was moved from Germany at that point back to the UK.
Any big preparations for them? I'm moving a big artillery regiment. It's quite a big job, isn't it?
Well, they left all their gear. You just simply, it was only personnel that was moved. And we ended up, we came back to the UK via the usual train through Germany and Holland, Hooker Holland, back to Harwich, and then to this Ogbourne St George, big old, really old army camp in the middle of nowhere out near Swindon, Wiltshire, is it? Wiltshire, I think. And was there for a couple of weeks.
Now, when was this?
This would be, probably about May 53. Yeah, about May 53.
So you'd been out there from November to May?
Aye, in Germany, yeah.
And what happened? What were you doing at Ogbourne St George?
Well, at Ogbourne St George,
you were only waiting, were you?
Yeah, it was in transit. Yeah, we didn't know where we were going, but we knew it was. It was probably the Middle East, but there was all sorts of rumours. And as I say, the main one was Homs in Tripoli, Tripolitania. That was where we're supposed to be going. We were sent away on embarkation leave. We had, I don't know, it was 14 days. Embarkation leave, yeah. 14 days embarkation
leave. And what was that like?
Well, it was great. It's, mind you, when I came home, there was nobody of my old pals about, and as much, I mean, one was in the RAF, and various others were in the army in various places. So it was a bit lonely, I suppose. I wasn't courting at the time. In a sense, I was nearly glad when it was over to head back to see what was going on.
Now, what preparations were made for going to the Middle East?
Well, I personally was back early. When I got back to Ogbourne St George, there was a lot of guys still on leave, and they had been given extended leave because the preparations weren't completed. But I flew out with the advance party of the regiment, which included